All right. Let's get fired up here.
Maximum freedom. Read.
Stay on target.
Maximum freedom.
Stay on target.
Maximum freedom. Read Rothbard.
Well, hello and welcome to the Actual Anarchy Podcast. This is the podcast where we talk about movies from a Rothbardian anarcho-capitalist perspective. And tonight, as we're nearing the Thanksgiving holiday season, why not talk about an assassination of American president that happened on November 22nd, 1963. We're talking about, of course, Oliver Stone's JFK. And this will be episode 208 of the show. You can find the show notes more at actualanarchy.com/208. Before we get into our guest with the last narrative portion of the show, I want to say hello to Robert. We saw each other just last week and things went well. We don't have to be in quarantine until, I think, effectively today or tomorrow, right?
Oh, because we saw each other in person, according to Jay Inslee's new guidelines. It's prior to a social gathering. So we should have quarantine for 14 days prior to seeing each other. Afterwards, it's all good. Whatever.
Well, I can assure you that I did, in fact, quarantine for two weeks before.
You quarantined before and you quarantined after. You're a good little drone, little NPC doing what you're told. That's what I like about you.
Well, if we're being honest, I quarantined myself anyway, cabin in the woods, mom's basement style. But, you know, that's just my normal functioning way of life. I am very happy that Amazon and Costco and all of these other things are available to me to bring goods and services to my doorstep. And so, you know, it's not a big change in my life, but I know it affects a lot of people.
They are enabling your dysfunction. Yes. You're correct. I don't think you could. Back in the day, you would have to have like thralls that you would have to like possess and control to send out to do your bidding to go get resources for you to bring back, a la vampire Dracula style. But these days, you can just order out, which is nice. It's probably what he does. Just dials it up on his smartphone, bring in the resources. So nice work, Daniel. Yes, modern technology. Jeff Bezos says they do.
I got Lurch on my phone, actually, you know, just Lurch delivers it for me. Adam's Family 2019 style. Yep. But that was a movie we did a couple of weeks ago with, of course, Pat MacFarlane and his wife, Lizzie, who are now of the Unhallowed podcast, also of Liberty Weekly. But tonight we have a special guest who's returning for it's a Kevin Costner film. We got to have this guy. It's a Kevin Costner epic, and it's going to be Pete Quinones. And we will introduce him right after these messages from the Last Matters. Hey everyone, it's Daniel Elwood and Robert Paul Johnson. We are the Last Nighters. You can find us at The Last Nighters or LastNighters.com and also on the Launchpad Media, where they're always launching new ideas in your direction. Check it out at TheLaunchpadMedia.com. This is episode 151 of the show. It's Kevin Costner, epic JFK. And of course, that can mean only one thing. It's the return of the great Peter R. Quinones for another round of Costner epics. And this should be a fun one of a very tough subject and plenty of stuff to go over in the movie. But welcome back to the show, Pete. We've had you on recently for mostly Kevin Costner movies and the wonderful Casablanca. For whatever reason, we cannot hear you.
Hi, can you hear me now?
We can. Yes. Welcome to the show, Pete.
Sorry, I was muted out. I was being nice. I was, normally I'm over here making noise, but happy for this one because this is one where Kevin just really gets to act where someone else took over all the other roles. So,
right. Yeah, that was one of our criticisms of The Postman, where it seemed like he was biting off more than he could chew. And it affected a promising premise of a movie and turned it into kind of a muddled mess for the most part. But yeah, I think you're right. Oliver Stone, great director, lots of good content here. And Costner can just focus on the one thing. And I would consider this one of his finer performances. Yep.
Absolutely.
And he's done, what, 40, 50 films? Well, I actually have a list
Can I add something right there?
You can.
I was thinking about this today, and maybe one of the reasons he did such a good job is because it's based off of a real person who was on the set. So one of the things he could do was he could look at the person's mannerisms and tics and everything and just copy them.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Jim Garrison's actually in the movie, so.
Yeah, he's Warren, right?
Yeah, I believe he's Warren, yeah.
Yeah. And he's a super tall dude too. I was reading about him. He's like 6'8" or something like that. So Costner, of course, is nowhere near that. But this I think was rated number 2 on this list I saw of Costner performances. And I think when we talked about The Patriot, when he tries to be like this super macho dude or do this like dystopian kind of Mad Max style stuff, just can't pull it off. Oh, sorry, Postman. Okay. Yeah. Postman or Waterworld, things like that, where he's like this action hero. He doesn't quite pull it off, but when he's like an everyman, like aw shucks kind of dude, I think he does it really well. Bull Durham, I think, is one of his better performances. And then this one. So anyway,
And there's no awkward like romance that's crammed into this film. He's already married, which really heightens the believability. I buy him much more as a father with kids than as a romantic lead. So yeah, right. I tend to agree with you guys. This is one of his best things.
Right. And that's a point I wanted to bring up, the family dynamic and him being so focused on his work. But before we get into that, we usually start with the Google description. However, Pete, I know you've been on the show a number of times and most of our listeners know who you are already, but I want to give you a moment to let people know what your show is about and where they can find your work and your movie.
Host of the Free Man Beyond the Wall podcast. This coming Thursday, episode 500 will be released, which is a milestone. And if you go to themonopolyonviolence.com, you can see a documentary that I co-executive produced with Chris Kofer and Robert Rex called The Monopoly on Violence, just like the address there. And I think a lot of people have really liked it. It has about 87,000 views on YouTube. And maybe one of these days, Amazon will be nice enough to okay it. Because right now it's in limbo. They haven't said no. They haven't said yes. And it's only been about 110 days. So,
how nice of them to wait to give you that response.
Well, Cody Wilson, when he put out his documentary on, half of it was about building guns at home, you know, building guns at home, and the other half was on Bitcoin. Yeah, they okayed that in 2 days.
Wow. You'd think that would be a little spicy for them.
Yeah, you know.
All right. Well, and one more thing before we get into the movie here, I want to give you a thank you for helping coordinate and arrange our previous guest, Bob Murphy, of course, for They Live. We had a great discussion. That was our most recent episode. And right before that, we had Kyle Anzalone on for The Beast, or The Beast of War, kind of given two different titles. And he is also working with you at the Libertarian Institute, which is a great, great website. And I really highly recommend that people do check that out as well.
Thank you. Yeah, and I was just on Kyle's show and made him really uncomfortable with some of the things I said. So I think it was a good appearance.
Yeah. That's how I usually mark my appearances down. So how uncomfortable did I make the host? All right. Well, let's get into the movie. And I was thinking for ratings, by the way, since there's some dispute on the number of bullets used in the assassination attempt. There's a magic bullet and there's either 3 shots or 6 or possibly 7. That could effectively be our rating system. So out of 10 high-powered, you know, sniper shells, something like that. So,
seems appropriate.
Right. I'm totally dorking this up. All right, here we go. The Google description is JFK came out in 1991, rated R, 1991. I already said that. Drama / mystery film, 3 hours and 26 minutes. 8.8 out of 10 on IMDb, 84% Rotten Tomatoes, and 72% on Metacritic. 89% of Google users liked it. Description reads, this acclaimed Oliver Stone drama presents the investigation into the assassination of President John F. Kennedy, led by New Orleans District Attorney Jim Garrison, played by Kevin Costner. When Garrison begins to doubt conventional thinking on the murder, he faces government resistance. And after the killing, of suspected assassin Lee Harvey Oswald, played by Gary Oldman. He closes the case. Later, however, Garrison reopens the investigation, finding evidence of an extensive conspiracy behind Kennedy's death. The release date was December 20, 1991. Director, of course, Oliver Stone, and it won a couple of Academy Awards. Stone was very prominently, he's a very political guy, and he's done several films related to presidencies and whatnot. But JFK, I think, is one of his most stronger efforts, I would say. So, Robert, let's go to you for your opening information, please.
All right. JFK, what to say? Okay, so whenever you're making a historical drama, I think there's two different ways you can lean. You can either lean heavy on the accuracy of the event and just kind of give you the information of what happened, or you can go more like the James Cameron Titanic approach and like bolt on a romance or some kind of extraneous story that's going to draw your attention and really get you hooked into the what's just a, otherwise would just be kind of a boat floats, boat sinks kind of story. This movie, I think, it does a decent job in giving us some information about Jim Garrison and his struggles with, you know, doing this case, but it's primarily an info dump of a movie pretending to be a historical drama. It is, I probably for most Americans, the first time, it was for me anyway, the first time they were being exposed to any of this information, this alternative information about the JFK assassination. So you're basically leading a regular, normal blue pill person by the hand, and you're presenting all this new information to you. And it's such a huge story and a complicated plot that you just kind of got to dump rapid fire facts. And there's so many scenes where he's just rifling off facts. And you see the other characters in the film are kind of like take the place of the audience where they're like, no way, man, this is too crazy. You would never, this could never happen. The US government would never. And then he's like, oh yeah, guess what, motherfucker? How about this? How about that? How about this? And then you're like, oh yeah. I remember the thing that did it for me was the Zapruder film. It was just the key, and the movie ends with that for the most part. But it really was the back and to the left, which sealed it for me. I didn't need all this other stuff. All this other stuff is really good and really fun to speculate on. And there's a lot of seemingly speculation in the film. But when it comes down to it, if Oswald was in the book depository, like the official story says, there's no way beyond the magic bullet, which is hysterical, but the back and to the left kill shot, which you see clearly in the Zapruder film, couldn't have come from Oswald. So by definition, it's a conspiracy. I see that it's not necessarily damning to Clay Shaw. And like, I don't know the exact ins and outs of that court case and why he was found innocent or not. And I could see how, but I think, you know, Garrison's main point wasn't necessarily to convict Clay Shaw, but it was to open up this information to the American people, to get them talking, get them interested in this incredible period in American history. And yeah, excellent fodder for a film. I think it's a fantastic libertarian film. It just shows the horrific, you know, power at play with political authority. So yeah, it's, I mean, what else to say? There's so much to talk about. Let's get into it. I might've just blown my load right now. Sorry about that. But yeah, let's go off on whatever you guys want to go.
All right. Well, that's great. And I think that you brought up a bunch of stuff that will be plenty to talk about for the length of our show. It's amazing to me how quickly our show goes by. Like, I usually look down, I'm like, holy crap, we're out of time. And I'm sure that'll happen tonight. But I just want to say that I think that Zoolander solved the case. And it was the two lookers over there on the grassy knoll.
Oh yeah, right. Two fashion models who are always the assassins.
Yeah, yeah, the Manchurian Candidate style. And I like that this brings up a lot of these kind of ideas that the government can be working in league against the American people and hiding things from people. It's obvious that they do it, especially today. But back then, it was probably unthinkable. and all of these operations go on MK Ultra. They talk about Operation Mongoose. There's Operation Paperclip. There's all sorts of things going on that are behind the scenes and have more recently been declassified. And one of the things I wanted to mention before we go to Pete for his opening is they seem to, Oliver Stone said that he read the Warren Report and he wanted to provide an alternative myth because he believed that the Warren Report was a myth itself. So he wasn't necessarily trying to make the historical document, but more of just something that competed in the narrative, but was based on historical information provided in Garrison's book and also a book by Jim Mars. But I'll direct it over to Pete for your opening on this as well.
This movie can be really distracting when you take into consideration the all-star cast. I mean, Kevin Bacon, John Candy, Joe Pesci, Donald Sutherland, just these people keep popping up. Michael Rooker. Michael Rooker, one of the most underrated. I mean, Henry Portrait of a Serial Killer, Michael Rooker. It's so distracting at some points because I'm like one of those people who notices actors and I'm like, holy crap, that's, and everything. But I would say the one thing that really stuck with me, and I think it's already been mentioned, is that it really seems like the trial was about the assassination itself, because there are some very odd segues where Costner will just be going, great, you know, all this information. And then he'd be like, then he'll pause and he'll be like, and that's why we believe that Clay Shaw. And it's almost like Shaw's an afterthought. So to me, the whole movie is really about trying to expose a conspiracy and basically using this guy as just the vehicle to do it. So
like Ron Paul using his campaign as a platform for education.
Correct. Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah, this is way more libertarian than I thought. Holy cow. All right. I think there's a lot to that. And one of the, I guess, theories that they bring into this is that Kennedy was going to pull the U.S. out of escalations of hostilities in Vietnam. He was going to cut the CIA into 1,000 pieces. There's other things that I'm aware of ancillary to the film, but he was talking about changing the currency structure from the Federal Reserve to either issuing green notes himself or returning to a gold standard. I don't recall exactly which, but there's a whole bunch of reasons why the deep state might not want this guy around much longer. And so you have motive and opportunity kind of presented here. And other things that are kind of presented is that the motorcade's course is changed at the last minute. The local military base is told to stand down and not provide any supplemental security. It's very 9/11-ish. And all of these things just conveniently are in place for the events to happen. And you'd almost think that, okay, one or two is kind of a coincidence, but 7 or 8 or 9 or 10, somebody's pulling some strings here.
Yeah, for sure. And in any time you got an event this big that you're going to have to use all these different elements, you want actually to have a variety of elements you can pull from. I think you got the Castro Cuba angle, you've got the mob angle, you've got the government, you got the vice president, you got all kinds of different people coming together so that different people can go, it was the mob. You could put blame and assign it wherever you need to at any given time to really throw the suspicion off of you yourself.
Well, then it came down to, in the end, I think when Michael Rooker, his character, his character's name is Boudreaux, is just like, you have all of these organizations, the mob, the CIA, all working together. That's insane. But I mean, who knows? I mean, who knows what it would take to assassinate a president?
Right. But the lone nut theory seems to be the least likely, sort of like the 9/11 commission, as James Corbett says, is a conspiracy itself. Like, you'd have to be crazy to believe their story, their version of events. And I think that's what Garrison saw in the Warren Commission, especially with Magic Bullet being the explanation for the number of wounds and the number of shots allegedly fired. And I think Stone made a point to include the scene where the woman is being interrogated by the Secret Service, saying, no, there are four lights, or there's only three lights, or whatever. You know, the Picard thing, yeah, where he's like implanting a false memory into this woman. Basically,
you heard echoes.
Right. Yeah. You heard echoes. And this is the thing that they do. Like, psychologically, you can implant memories into people. You can make them believe with enhanced interrogation techniques, and even just repeating something over and over again, and make people believe that they saw something that they didn't see. There's a famous like gorilla experiment where if you have people like bouncing a basketball and you say to the subject, hey, count how many times the basketball bounces during this video. And they have a gorilla go through the back of the scene, and they go, okay, did you notice anything weird? Did you notice a gorilla in the movie? And they're like, no, because they're so focused on one thing. So if there were six or seven shots, but they're telling the witnesses that they only heard three, and then that witness begins to believe that that's the story, then there are only three bullets. And so it's like you said, Robert, it's impossible for where Oswald was purported to be, the sixth floor of the Texas Book Depository building, to have fired a bullet that would have hit Kennedy in the front of the face, where he goes back and to the left, like in the magic loogie scene in the Seinfeld.
Still, I had Wayne Knight in both scenes, which is fantastic. Yeah.
Right. And I love that cultural reference, and I love the Zoolander reference. So I wanted to bring those up. And the lone nut thing comes from a Rothbard lecture that I have, and I'll post that on our show notes page. But he considered himself a bit of an aficionado of studying the JFK assassination. So I'm going to see if there's any more things that he has said or written about it, and include that as well. But anyway, where would you like to go next, Robert?
Well, we could talk about Jim Garrison. Multiple times in this show, we have been faced with characters that aren't exactly, I would say, minding their own business or minding their own room. And Jim Garrison is a guy who is, in the very beginning of the film, he is very blue-pilled. Even though he's a prosecutor, DA guy for the city of New Orleans, you know, you'd think he had seen quite a bit and dealt with a lot of corruption. It wouldn't be too surprising.
Yeah, he seemed like a wide-eyed idealist.
But he was very much like, what? They would do that? What? And then at one point, who was it? Tells him he's so naive. Amazing
Sutherland.
No, the crazy act, the amazing, the guy that's in the clean guy. Odd.
Yeah. Jack Lemmon.
Yeah, he tells him he's so naive because he's just this wide-eyed prosecutor. He's like, what? And he doesn't really, kind of paints him as a guy who doesn't know what he's getting into. But then as he is investigating, it quickly kind of turns and is like, no, Oswald didn't even fire a shot. He was just this, and these other guys did it. And he realizes, you know, especially when Bobby Kennedy gets killed, that these people are really serious, and he could be in real danger. And his wife, Sissy Spacek, right? She at one point is like, this is too much. This is crazy. Not only are you putting our kids in undue danger, you're barely even seeing your kids because you're so wrapped up in this case where it's just consuming your life. And, you know, I kind of liken it to becoming a libertarian, becoming, you know, really red-pilled on a lot of this information. I remember when I first became like a libertarian and having conversations with people, and I was in my kind of evangelical phase, and I'd be telling people about this stuff, maybe some conspiracy stuff. They'd be like, well, what's the point of even talking about this? What's the point of even knowing about this? This isn't going to affect your life. All this does is make you think about things negatively. You know, you're not really positive. But for him, you know, that's a mild version compared to what he did. He was doing a very brave thing, but at the expense of his family. So my question for Daniel is, as always, was Jim Garrison a good father? Would you have done the same thing in the same situation, or was he a bad dad? Should he have been like, I'm going to recuse myself from this case. We're not going to prosecute this because I want to live a normal life, like my wife says. Now, I know Sissy Spacek at the end, she's at the trial and she's like proud of him, kind of. But I think she had some pretty real fears during a couple of those scenes in the middle there where she's like, I'm taking our kids and leaving because I just, my daughter just got threatened on the phone.
Right. You know, right. And she seemed to think that he was actually crazy.
At one point she's wondering whether or not she doesn't even believe him. Like half the stuff he's talking about. At one point he's like, what? You don't believe me all this time. I've been telling you this stuff and you're not on board with this, what I'm saying.
Right. Right. And that reminds me with my wife, when we were dating, I used to preface almost everything I would say, like, this might sound crazy, but, and this is back in my evangelical days,
Jim Garrison character.
Yeah. You know, it's a tough question because I've of course the hindsight of seeing the film and already distrusting government. I'm not in a position where Garrison like is a true blue patriotic believer in the system and the process and all of these things. So I think that he probably had something that wasn't sitting right in his mind because he had sort of this conflicting view. He had like, there's no way that this is even possible, but these official documents that I'm looking through do not make sense at all. They're obviously lying or covering something up and he just can't let it go. And so I can't really put myself in that position because I think they're all full of shit. But to the point of him being so focused on the one thing at the detriment to his family. Yeah. That kind of pulls at me a little bit. Like I probably work on more stuff and more things than I should. And I've really tried to tone it down a bit so that I can spend more time with my kids because this is time I will never get back. And I think Sissy SpaceX said that to Costner's character in this, that, hey, you know, the kids are going to be growing up before you know it and you can't get this time back. So I think that I probably would have gone as far as him, even though I think he was doing something that was right within the structure of the system. And by bending the rules of that system.
Okay. So you ultimately, well, you're not answering the question of whether he's a bad dad or not, but ultimately was he successful in what he let out to do, or was all that hell that he went through pointless?
Well, so that's kind of unrelated in being a bad dad. Yes, I think he was kind of a bad dad. Was he successful? Well, he was successful in getting it to be part of public record. And he was successful in writing a book about it and then having a movie made about it. And so now we're talking about it tonight. So in a certain respect, there was some success. Some change has occurred as a result of what he did. Whereas if the Warren Commission report had been the final say, and that's it, end of story, you know, we're not having this conversation and maybe we're not, you know, dealing with conspiracy theories like that probably didn't get brought up until Garrison started digging into this, right? The whole CIA creation of the term conspiracy theory.
So let me pose this hypothetical to you because we know how it turns out and we know how the story ends. His kids live, but suppose one of them didn't. Would it all have been worth it then? What if one of his daughters gets kidnapped, raped, murdered, whatever, and then the pair divorce, and it just all ends in tragedy?
Yeah, I mean, the challenge there is those things are possible irregardless.
True, but you're drawing that attention to you by taking on willing, trained killer murderer people.
The deep state. Yeah.
People who have no compunction about wiping you out. And
well, I'm surprised.
Perfectly good at night.
I'm surprised they didn't do that, honestly.
Well, they tried to discredit him. That's one of the tactics for sure with all that bad press that he got.
And they tried to make him out to be gay.
Yeah.
Now, when the story broke in the movie, they looked at it as a bad thing. But then Garrison, I think, turned that around and was like, okay, because now we have all this publicity, they can't really.
Too much light is on you, right? Now. Too many eyeballs, right?
So maybe whoever tipped off the press to that story did him a favor. Because had he been just some, you know, district attorney without the spotlight, maybe they just, you know, suicide him. You know, there was a movie where there's like this black bag operation where like they break into the guy's apartment and inject something in his toe and no one can see it. And it looks like he had a heart attack. I forget the name of that.
Yeah. Yeah. Jab him with the CIA cyanide injector thing with in the umbrella.
Right. Yeah. Dude had a heart attack, whatever, you know, stressful job, whatnot.
Yeah.
And who knows? I mean, they could have done that anyway, even with the spotlight on him. I mean, look what they did to Epstein, you know?
Yeah.
And there was no social media back then. So it's not like people could start putting two and two together right away and start memeing it.
Right.
I just say, though, that if there's ever going to be another like public execution like this of a president, though, I mean, with so many cell phones and whatnots out there, it would have to be, I don't know, they'd have to take it to the next level, you know?
Well, that's an interesting point you bring up, because there are some parallels, I think, to present day in this film, at least presented, where they say that Kennedy stole the election. Mm-hmm. And people are upset about that. And it appears...
Well, he did.
But it appears there is potential impropriety going on in this one, despite all of the reassurances by all the big tech and social media companies telling me that, oh, this is a totally transparent and rigorous process, and there's no way that there could be election fraud, even though there's been election fraud in literally every election ever in the history of elections. But we are assured now. Pete, I think you had a meme recently that was a tweet from the Titanic, like, oh, we're a little worried about these icebergs. And it had a fact check on it. It was like, icebergs are shown to be totally benign and safe.
It's amazing that social media is shaping the truth.
And so immediately.
Yeah.
In real time.
But it's a private company, bro.
You
can't say anything about it.
Totally fine. I liked it. Was it Deist or was it Rechtenwald? He said, with how entrenched they are with government, you can't really consider them truly private anymore. They're sort of doing the behest of government.
I think it was Rechtenwald. I don't know. Jeff may have said that, but Rechtenwald, his speech in Lake Jackson 2 weekends ago or a week and a half ago, he made that point. His whole speech was about how all of these social media companies were financed by the government. That's how they started, with government money and everything. So, yeah, that's, and I've been saying that for a year and a half, but you know, no one wanted to listen to me. It's a private company. So, you know, libertarians are going to be loaded onto boxcars and they're going to be not complaining because Walmart owns them.
The Walmart boxcars. Yeah. But yeah, I think you're totally right. And one of the things that really stood out to me was that they were live fact-checking, well, not even live fact-checking, but like immediately fact-checking tweets by Trump saying there is no evidence of election fraud, even though within the tweet itself, he's saying there's this evidence.
Yeah.
So it's, my point was, how could they possibly know? It's new information. You know,
I think it was Michael Malice who said, what if the president, or it was Dave Smith or Michael Malice said, what if the president came out and said the earth is flat? Do you immediately censor him, or are you like, wait a minute, let's hear him out. He's the president. He might know shit. You know, he might know something that we don't know. What is he saying here? You know, I mean, if Trump came out tomorrow and said the earth is flat, don't censor him. I want to hear this. You know, I want to see if he's going to, who he's going to pull out there as an expert and what proof he has, you know? So what's the difference? I mean, this election was stolen from me. So you're gonna censor the president of the United States, because we're basically, what we're seeing now is banana republic kind of stuff for the technocratic age. So it used to be that in a banana republic, election happened. Someone said, "Hey, wait a minute, I think there's some fraud here." They'd string him up, cut him open, let his intestines hang out, so that the whole town could see, and they would stop asking these questions. Well, in the technocratic age, you just have the private companies say he's lying, and the press say he's lying. And in the middle of an interview, if he starts saying something, you cut him off and say, this isn't true. I mean, how is that not like a coup?
Yeah.
A coup is taking place. You know, I mean, and I don't know that, I mean, things look really shady to me. You know, when you see, oh, 130,000 votes came in all for Biden and everything, and people are making excuses and whatever, yada, yada. But the fact that social media, I mean, I think, you know how Curtis Yarvin came up with the cathedral mm-hmm. where it's you have the government, you have the press and the universities. You have to put the social media companies in there now. They have to be added in there. You have to put Twitter and Facebook in there and Google. You have to put Google in there. I mean, this cathedral is huge. It needs to be burnt down, but we got to figure that out.
Yeah, it seems like the conspiracy of another coup d'etat that we're talking about in the movie, where there's all these different elements, the mob, the deep state, mm-hmm. military, CIA, intelligence community, et cetera. And now in modern day, I saw somebody post this the other day. It's like, I really hate how they're fighting World War III. Like that it's in your head, you know, it's shaping your opinions, shaping what you can see and can't see. And Robert, we've talked about this many times in the past. You refute ideas with better ideas. You don't black them out and say, no, you can't hear this or you can't see this. You confront them and you say, why is this wrong or incorrect? And it's not the same as the fact checking that they're doing in the social media, because that's obviously very, very biased and usually laughably wrong anyway. But to hide something, it gives it almost a bit of a Streisand effect. You know, then people do seek it out. And
well, to be in their defense, though, that's what you have to do if you don't have the truth on your side. You've got to obfuscate and censor.
So it's an admission.
You don't have better ideas with which to shine a light on these bad ideas.
I mean, right. Yeah. It used to be go to straight to ad hom or poison the well, or I don't like the source or whatever. And now it's no, just delete them, eliminate them, limit their voice. And Bob actually brought this up in the last portion of our show last week. He's like, well, we got to remember, you know, these social media apparatus didn't even exist 20 years ago. However, and I wish I thought of this at the time, but they do exist and have existed for about 20 years, and people have invested a lot of time, and it's become part of the culture, part of living. So you wouldn't go back and say, oh, cutting off somebody's electricity or running water doesn't affect them. Well, you know, 100 years ago or 200 years ago, people didn't even have that. So you could just extenuate Bob's argument, be like, well, running water isn't a thing that you need to worry about. That didn't even exist before this. You know, so I'm liking it to like, right. It's become part of your life.
Right. And if the CIA and the deep state aren't seeking to control social media and don't have their tentacles elbow deep inside Mark Zuckerberg's asshole, then they're not doing their job, because social media is obviously a massively powerful tool with which to shape opinion.
Right. Yeah. There was a great lecture by Tom DiLorenzo where he was talking about antitrust and how Bill Gates was targeted so that they would be able to bend him to their, you know, to go along, to get along. So he was out playing golf with Bill Clinton or whatever. Meanwhile, they're like prosecuting a case against him, which it turned out later. And I think this was an award-winning journalism thing. The case was fabricated against him by his competitors.
Mm-hmm. I remember that.
So anyway, yeah. We should get back to the movie a little bit. We're sort of diverging.
Well, the movie is all about conspiracies, and that's what we're talking about.
Right. So I guess everything fits in there. What do you guys think of? Let's see. I wrote in the description of this episode that Oliver Stone is fighting with us for over 3 hours, trying to get us to put on the damn glasses.
Yeah. Yeah. He kind of hits you over the head with so much information. I'm not surprised that the movie is over 3 hours long. It almost needs to be like a, you know, a 10-part miniseries or something like that. Maybe
like the Ken Burns style.
Like Ken Burns style or the Waco style or anything where you can take your time and kind of digest so much, because it's really just like an info dump. And I would have to watch it multiple times to even begin to tell you names, places, dates, exactly who and how each person was connected to who. There's just so much happening that you get a sense. You definitely walk out of the theater getting a sense that, oh yeah, there's definitely a conspiracy. I don't know exactly how it all happened, but you know that something smells nasty in the state of Denmark. But yeah, and then of course he doesn't have the exact, probably, you know, he's probably speculating on a lot of what happened, of course, based on, you know, a couple of books that were written. But you know, is it a better story than the Warren Commission? Yeah, of course.
Well, unless you like fantasies.
Yeah, unless you're like more of a Lord of the Rings fan. Which is not to smash on Lord of the Rings fans. I'm a big Lord of the Rings fan.
There's some good conspiracies in that, too. Faramir?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Faramir. Okay.
So I like how they... Oh, go ahead,
Daniel. No, son of a bitch. Do it.
All right. Well, I brought up the implanting of false memories, but then there was also destroying records and altering evidence. All of the interviews with Lee Harvey Oswald were, of course, conveniently not recorded or destroyed. So there's all these, all this smoke, right? And that's what Garrison saw that led him to conclude that there must have been something nefarious going on. And that's what led him to drive into this further. But then we have the whole concept of conspiracy theory, which is used as a tool to blunt inquiry. Like if you just simply say, oh, that's a conspiracy theory, that's not meant to engage in further investigation. That's meant merely to dismiss and to say, no, that's just too crazy, and how ableist of them to be an actual thing. So it destroys curiosity. And I think that it plays really well in the NPC mindset because it's the... they're the go along, get along types, right? Like whatever the prevailing thing is, like Tom Woods has made this point many times. You know, the famous picture of like all these guys like saluting, it's either the Sig Heil or a traditional US salute. And there's one guy not doing it. And everyone's like, I'd be that one guy not going along.
Bullshit.
Yeah. 99% of people probably are going to be going along with the group. And it's
every progressive alive would have been turning in Jews in 1930s Germany.
They're doing it now with the mask stuff.
Yeah.
You know?
Of course.
And I'm not trying to say it's the same, but it's getting there. You know, they're making lists, right, of like people who are conservative or Trump supporters. To what end? They're already saying, like, so you can't have a job. You can't be a part of, like, civilized society. Like, they want to destroy you. They want to destroy your livelihood. It's not
better,
too far off.
Yeah, I think
glad I'm a
better.
Trained agorist.
I think it's better in general. It's a better strategy for them to destroy who you are and discredit you. I think that it makes people more afraid of being that person. You're more of an example to them because they don't necessarily, they of course they have the power to kill you and whatever, but they don't necessarily have massive all-encompassing power. So the conspiracy theories, you know, if you make it like a secret, I'm not really, how do I explain this? But if you can think that they're everywhere and they can strike at any time, it gives them more power. So you are, you know, you're less likely, you think it's like secret knowledge, you're more afraid of that information. Whereas like with the current regulations from the governor who say that you have to do this X, Y, and Z, and you can't do this and that and the other thing, where it's basically relying on not only you to go along because you believe in this political authority, but also your neighbor to narc on you and to put pressure on you and other people to kind of police you, right? Because they can't police at all. They don't, they're a tiny little group. If you watch like Larkin Rose's The Tiny Red Dot, you know that we vastly outnumber these assholes, and it's really our own kind of slave mentality that allows them to get away with the shit.
Right. And it's even more so on display now. Like, I brought this up so many times, like, I go through these periods of like almost depression about how outnumbered we are. Like, it's worse than I thought, you know?
Yeah. No, there's a lot of Karens and there's a lot of people that are just, you know, there's a, just the other day I was sitting in the restaurant and I had a couple walk up to me. And they started asking me about these new regulations and whether I was going to follow them or not. And I had a decision to make at that point. I was like, who are these people and which way do they believe? And then I just tell the truth. I'm like, I'll leave it up to the property owners since we rent these places if they want us to not do it. But ultimately, if it was up to me, I would be open all the time, full capacity, whatever. Because I don't give a shit about what the governor's dictates are. And that turned out to be the right answer. They were fully on board with me. And that was they were like, you know, it's not even legal what they're doing. They don't have the power to do this.
Yeah.
And I was like, right on, brother.
But you had to be careful in how you presented it. Yeah, I totally feel that.
But I had to be careful in how I presented. I couldn't just come off straight ANCAP Voluntrist and be like, no, fuck you.
Yeah. Now you were telling me a story about going to the grocery store, the local grocery store there. and they're like handing out masks, and you're like, no, no, thanks. And then at the checkout, the lady's like, oh, it appears you forgot your mask. And you're like, no, no, I didn't.
Yeah, no, I didn't.
My favorite thing, was though, is that when I walked in, there was a guy who was wearing this. It looked like it was like a faux police outfit, but it was like, you know, it was like something he got at like a Halloween costume store, and it had a little star, but it was, you know, just printed on it. It looked like from a distance.
Was he a stripper?
He was a store employee that they just put out there to intimidate and kind of, you know, get people to conform with their policy without actually having any kind of, you know, real threat.
I'm sure it was pretty effective. Like, it was the Milgram experiment, like just have a lab coat and a clipboard. People would go along with the request, you know,
Milgram has been debunked.
Really?
Yeah.
You got some knowledge there, Pete?
Yeah. In 2015, 2016, people started looking into Milgram, and it's pretty debunked. We were actually going to have Milgram in our documentary. And after we read the debunkings of it and everything, we decided not to. So I'm not going to go deep into it right now. But yeah, there's a lot of those stats were played with. So
interesting. I mean, like voters, are you suggesting that more people resisted than otherwise claimed?
I'm saying that some people may have been pushed to become more authoritarian than they actually were at the time. You look it up. I mean, anyone can look it up. Go and look Milgram experiment debunked and read it for yourself and see what you think. I'm not saying 100% that, you know, we just decided there was enough there that we were just like, we're not going to put it in there. So,
okay. I know that he had intended to try to uncover why people went along with orders from superiors to do horrific acts in the Nazi regime. And so when you have that kind of drive or you know, that sort of like what you're looking for, you'll maybe not intentionally, you'll find it even if it's not really there. You know what I mean? Like it taints the process.
All we have to do is look at the police in this country to know that just following orders is a mantra of theirs. And my favorite is when I push them, and I'll push a cop and they'll be like, well, you need to vote for better politicians. And I'll be like, you just proved my point. You just proved my point that you're just going to follow orders. You're saying, oh, because, and that's also a very dictator kind of thing. Well, you didn't do the right thing, so now we're going to oppress you.
Yeah.
You know, but
because that's falling back on the, well, I don't make the laws, I just enforce them.
Yeah.
So you need to vote for people who are going to make better laws.
Yes.
Well, then, they're admitting like, well, whatever the law is, that's what I'm going to do.
Pure Nuremberg. Yeah.
Yeah. Wild. All right. Well, one other thing that I really liked about this film is that it opens on Eisenhower's military industrial complex speech.
Yes.
Which I think is super important and probably not listened to enough, but I think that he was absolutely right in that it will create a situation where there's this power that's either sought or unsought, but it's still there. And will be acquired, sort of similar to what I was just saying about if you have a goal in mind with an experiment that you're going to perhaps taint the process and how you get it. Similarly, when you have the goal of selling these armaments, that you're going to maybe not even fully aware, push for conflict, push for the need for more of these things and using them.
Yeah. Did you guys, this is unconfirmed, but I heard that when it looked like Biden was going to win, that the defense contractors, like stock market, bumped up quite a bit. You guys hear that?
I don't know anything about that. I didn't hear that.
Okay. Hmm. Well, I do know back I remember back when the original Iraq War started, like in what was it? 2002, 2003?
The original 91.
2003, Iraq War 2 is 2003.
Okay, Iraq War 2, yeah. I remember looking up, like, Bell Helicopter, General Dynamics, Boeing, Raytheon, and they were all just going up, right as the war was building up. And it just, war is a racket, it's a business, and
yeah, of course they're going to have massive vested interest in whether or not they have sales or not.
Well, in 2017, you remember when Trump sent, I think it was 59 Tomahawks into Syria, into a Syrian airbase, and a bunch of pro-Trumpers got pissed off, I think. Ann Coulter, like, most famously was like, what the hell are you doing and everything? Yeah, Raytheon stock went up the next day.
Right.
I mean, it just went, yeah. It, I think it shot up like $5 or something like that. So, yeah.
Wasn't
I mean,
when CNN said he was, that was like his first presidential thing?
He became, this is his first presidential act. Really killing people as a president? These people are fucking hyenas. Vampires, man.
Now, this is unsubstantiated, but I heard that the targets that were destroyed were to minimize actual effective damage and killing.
I believe that's true. I believe that they let them, because I think there were Russians there, and killing Russians, yeah, that'd be a really bad idea. And they let them know way ahead of time. So they basically dropped 59 bombs onto an empty Air Force base. But still, you know, it's like, what did that do? I mean, just
it's a virtue Raytheon signal.
Stock. Yeah, yeah. It made Raytheon stock go up. I mean, it's, you know, because you got to buy back those 59 now. Because you have to be fully prepared. You know, when the Pashtuns in Afghanistan come with their air force to kill us.
Yeah, man. Gotta watch out.
I can't stand it, man. It is. The more you listen to Scott Horton, the more you're just like, I want to. I can't handle this anymore. You know,
right, right, yeah, and I think that was setting the stage for Oliver Stone's kind of theory that there's all these elements within the state that would want Kennedy to be out of the way because he was thwarting this military industrial complex and like trying to kneecap the CIA and all these other things. But then beyond that, let's see. I have a note here about it. Oh, there was the changing of the currency. But basically, it's like so many groups would have come out better because Kennedy was out of the way. So you didn't even necessarily need them to know about each other working in concert. And so he sort of brings this up when he's doing the court case where he's aggrandizing the whole conspiracy theory. He's like, there's all these simultaneous shooters and nobody knows if they're the one who actually did the shooting. I think he even alluded to that maybe some of them thought that they had blanks or potentially had blanks. So it's sort of a Russian roulette situation. So they all have plausible deniability.
You mean a firing squad type situation?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. So nobody is at fault and they could all say, oh, it wasn't me or it wasn't definitely me, that kind of thing.
Yeah. Yeah. It's what do they say? They said it would be one person would be firing blanks, so no one would really know they wouldn't know who was shooting, actually, if they took the kill shot or something like that.
Yeah.
And that's right. Brilliant. That's brilliant, actually. That's so Machiavellian, even Sun Tzu in Art of War. I mean, yeah. You have to give it up to those people. They are deviously brilliant.
I wonder if that would have given them a leg up in like a lie detector test.
Oh, sure.
As well, like psychologically.
Most likely, yeah. Now, Pete, are you a betting man?
Not anymore, but there was definitely a day when I enjoyed going to the horse races. And yeah, living in South Florida, there was a harness track not too far from me. So, yeah.
Well, in the film, Jim Garrison says that these documents are going to be unearthed in within the next decade or so. What do you think the odds are on that actually happening?
It's not going to happen. Trump already tried to do it.
Trump
Trump released
some of them. Yeah,
released some of them, and they said, "Well, these can't be released." I mean, I just don't think they're going to. We're at the banana republic point. They're not going to allow anything to come out that's going to damage them. JFK is the one conspiracy theory out of all of them that the majority of Americans, even if it's 51%, look at and go, yeah, that's kind of plausible. It's kind of plausible that they killed that guy. I don't think they're ever going to let everything that happened there come out because, or at least this, until everyone who's dead, who like, you know, bought into that, who was alive at the time, born shortly after the time. I don't think that information's, they're going to allow that information to come out.
But right, even when they do, it's probably gonna be like, oh, it was so long ago.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or it's like, look at those terrible people. They were alive back then. We're good people now. We would never do anything like that.
And the assassination of JFK would be more important to the average American than like the Gulf of Tonkin incident. And the Gulf of Tonkin incident has already been proven to be, it didn't happen.
Admitted.
Yeah, they admitted it didn't happen. And, you know, it's funny as Ray McGovern, you know, former CIA chief who briefed President Reagan every morning on Russia. Scott Horton asked him on a podcast, how many people would have known that the Gulf of Tonkin incident didn't happen? He said 20 to 40,000.
Oof.
And they didn't say anything.
Yeah,
and that's the one thing that those who throw around the phrase conspiracy theory to try and shut you up and to try to marginalize you go to is, oh, no one would keep this secret. And Ray McGovern, ex-CIA agent, says 20 to 40,000 people would have known that that didn't happen, and they all kept it secret.
Didn't McNamara admit it before he died? Wasn't he in a documentary? Where he admitted that the Gulf of Tonkin didn't actually happen?
Something like that?
Not sure.
Yeah.
Not sure.
Yeah. But yeah, still, it nobody seemed
time,
to care.
You would think at the time, somebody would have been like, you know, they start escalating the war in Vietnam and someone's like, hey, wait a minute, you know, that actually didn't happen. No, it had, what, McNamara had to die? I mean, McNamara was what, at the beginning of the war, 40? So he probably lived till he was, what, 70? I mean, so you're talking about into the 90s. So no one at the time said anything. And all these people knew it. You know, and what's funny, you know, is, I'm not going to say that, too personal. My dad was military intelligence, so I'll shut up.
All right. Well, maybe offline. Offline. But speaking of the Gulf of Tonkin, and then we should start to wind this down. It seemed as though Stone was also sort of bringing up the concept that if they could blame the killing of Kennedy on the Cubans, that would incite the American public into wanting to invade Cuba. So it would have been the Gulf of Tonkin, but before the Gulf of Tonkin, another false flag, like the Remember the Maine situation or the Lusitania.
But they already had the Bay of Pigs
mm-hmm.
incident. So it would have been after the Bay of Pigs incident. And that's one of the things I think, didn't David Ferry allude to the fact in the movie that they would have had problems with doing that because they were really upset over the Bay of Pigs, all the revolutionaries and everything in the government.
Right.
I think David Ferrier said that there may be some problems trying to convince them to try and do it again if they wouldn't do it, you know, all at that time of the Bay of Pigs happened. So,
right. I think in the movie they said that Kennedy didn't provide air support.
Yeah.
And so they were very upset.
They were all ready to go. And then
they raided their clandestine training camp. Like the feds raided and took all of their weapons.
Shut it down.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, no one. And one thing that they didn't mention in the, did they mention, I don't remember that. Did they mention Operation Northwoods?
No, not in JFK.
Yeah. You would have thought that would have probably come up. And it's really interesting that Oliver Stone left that out.
That was the one where it was talking about hijacked planes going into buildings, right?
It was the one where they were going to have people that looked like Cubans go into Miami and start killing people.
Oh, right. Yeah.
So that would have been, I hadn't heard the planes into buildings that early yet. That would be real interesting because it'd be like, can you imagine that? It's like, oh, Operation Northwoods, we're going to do that. And then 9/11 happens. And you're like, yeah, that just, you know, it happened.
No, I think that's a real thing. I think that,
really?
Jones used to talk about it. They had in the plan was to have it be remote control somehow. But this is, you know, back in the 60s or 70s. So it would have been a pretty rudimentary like mode of control. But mm-hmm. I'm pretty sure that, that there is something like that, and I'll have to look it up and I'll send you the link or the name of it.
Yeah. I'd love to see that. Yeah.
Robert, you might know, you used to listen to Jones.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about. And I think you're both right in some sense from what I remember.
I'm sure it's in loose change.
I'd have to go back and look at Northwoods, but
I'm sure the name of it's in loose change.
The point of Northwoods was that it was a false flag operation meant to incite, you know, war.
And yeah, popular support.
Right, to kill civilians, and it got up to Kennedy's desk. Or McNamara's desk, one or the other.
Right.
It was like high up in the government was the point. It was like, it was kind of talking about all the people who would be like, well, no, the government would never carry out 9/11 because, you know, you got all these good people in the government. It's like, well, look at Northwoods.
Right. They the fact that they're considering it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we know there's, I mean, yeah, there's all kinds of great, great people in government.
Oh yeah.
The best.
Wonderful. Yeah. Only the best. Yeah.
Only
yeah. Hayek's got a great article about why the
cream rises to the top. You know what I mean? The cream.
What'd you say about Hayek?
Yeah. He has a great article about why the worst rise to the top. It's chapter 10 of Road to Serfdom.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Yeah, so, and anyone who wants to read that book, start at chapter 7. Chapter 1 through 6 are irrelevant. Just start at chapter 7, because if you start at chapter 1, you might just put it down. Just FYI.
Okay, yeah. tricks and tips from Pete Quinones.
Life hacks.
I try.
All right, well, let's get into final summary interview, unless either of you have any other final points you want to make before we get into that.
I mean, I think we've kind of talked about it. It's too complex of a film to really break down scene by scene or anything like that. It's more of a gestalt of a film. Mm-hmm. You can talk in broad strokes. So yeah, I'm ready anytime you want to start.
Okay. How about you, Pete?
Say that again. Ask question.
Do you have any final points you want to make before we get into final summary and review?
I think the one scene that really stuck out to me, and I don't know why, is a scene after, Jim watches Bobby Kennedy get killed, and he goes into the bedroom to wake up his wife and let her know. And she looks at him and goes, "Both brothers." That, for some reason, when I was a normie, just not, you know, not a libertarian, that stuck with me and like was emotional to me. Was, you know, they would, that the government would actually take out pretty much two thirds of a family at that point in order to make sure that whatever they had going on would keep going on.
Yeah. Yeah. And,
Sissy Spacek is a great actress. She really is. And that was, it just really stuck with me. And when I was watching it this morning, again, getting ready for this, I was waiting for that scene to see if it hit me as hard as it did back then and everything. And it still was, I thought it was still pretty powerful.
And she actually does have a tear, which is pretty impressive.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think you're right. It almost pulls on the same strings as Saving Private Ryan.
Yeah.
Where,
right.
You know,
I'm so anti-war, but that movie is so great. I'm transfixed every time that's on. It's just, you're just like,
yeah,
watching that, you know?
Yeah. We had a great episode with Prof. CJ on that one for,
yep.
That was what, in July, right?
Yeah, finally got recent. To meet him face to face at Tom Woods' house a few weeks ago. What a cool dude, man. Great guy.
Oh yeah, and you guys did a discussion about some horror movies, right?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, we were talking about two 1985 horror movies, Fright Night and Return of the Living Dead. And it was just a long episode of us just geeking out on 80s horror. It was pretty cool.
Awesome. Yeah. Yeah. I'll post that on our show notes page. I know I said I would do that on our last episode, but I'm a lazy son of a bitch. So I haven't done it, but
yeah, you know, what's funny about that episode is that's like one of my least downloaded episodes in like the last 6 months. It's just like, I put out a Halloween episode with reviewing a couple horror movies and it's just like, everybody's just like, screw you.
Oh, see, we're in the wrong niche, Robert.
Yeah. That sounds like fun to me.
All right. Well, Robert, why don't you lead us off with your final summary review and give me how many gunshots out of 10?
Okay. So I don't know if my review is going to be the actual number of shots fired that day, but I think this is one of the first, I mean, we just did They Live, which is also pointed to this kind of like blue pill, red pill situation. And there's the Matrix, blue pill, red pill. This is also a big red pill for the American people. If for anybody that still had illusions about, you know, oh, the government would never do that, or you know, they're normally great people. And then there's just, you know, a few bad eggs that get in there and do bad things. I think this is a great film to watch to kind of open your eyes about that, that these are people who have big money at risk and are not afraid to crack a few eggs to make their war omelets. So there's a, not my favorite scene at all, but just there's the character of the investigator who eventually leaves. And he's like, this is too much for me. I'm out. But at one point they're arguing, Jim and him are arguing. And he's like, are you calling the president a murderer? And for me, it was just kind of funny because yeah. Like they're all murderers, like thousands of times over, almost all of them. I call them all murderers. What? But at the time, and for that guy, you know, growing up drinking the Kool-Aid, it's unthinkable, right? Because, you know, the U.S. is the good guys and they wouldn't do such a thing. We're all the good guys. The bad people, they live in those other countries. You know, they live in the Russias and the sandy countries and the desert countries and just any other places where there's, you know, oil and resources that people want and things to fight over and stuff like that. It's not, you know, it's not us. We're the good ones. And you just, it just, you know, it's the education system just doing a great job propagandizing to the people. You got to get them young. You got to get them young and you got to get them thinking that, you know, we're the good people and that you haven't been hijacked and that the government and the nation is integral and absolutely necessary to your life and to the lives of everybody and the livelihoods of everybody. That is absolutely essential. Otherwise, you get people questioning and you don't want that. And like we talked about today with the social media, they are really working hard to crack down on independent thought and critical thought. So this is one of the foundational films, I think, for, you know, that questioning libertarian mind. I think it's fantastic. I think if this is like a 9 gunshots from the grassy knoll out of 10. I don't think it's the best movie. I don't think that this is like a movie that's like a Casablanca good. I think it's more of an information dump. So it's not, you're not going to get everything. You're not going to get the romance. You're not going to get the interesting characters that necessarily, there's all kinds of interesting characters, but you know, it's more about this, what happened than it is about, you know, a compelling narrative, even though there's plenty of compelling narrative. So I wouldn't say that this is like a perfect movie, but it is really, really highly recommended viewing for pretty much everybody. So for that reason alone, and it's also Costner's one of his best performances. You got, like Pete was talking about, you got amazing actors, Tommy Lee Jones, you know, you got all these great people who are just in like small roles. I mean, not necessarily small roles, but it's like all this talent came together and it's all on display. You know, it's something to behold and I'm glad it's made. And 9 out of 10 gunshots from the grassy knoll, Daniel.
Wow. Well, so one looker from the grassy knoll gives 9 gunshots. And how about the other looker?
So, wait. It was like a 10, but one of them fired a blank. So it's 9 bullets.
Right. All right, Pete, what's your rating and review?
I just love all the information that comes out in it. There's so much there. The Donald Sutherland character talking about the military, basically he's like the one exposing the military industrial complex. He said, find out how much Bell Helicopter made, find out how much Northrop Grumman made. That's such a great character. I don't know how much is true about him saying that he was down in Australia and all this information was coming out. Before information was coming out in the United States. I mean, that's kind of hard to gauge. We don't have anything. And even if that was made public at one time, it's probably disappeared by now. Kevin Bacon, just insane role. John Candy with his, like a hipster, like a proto hipster, just saying all these weird things. I mean, Joe Pesci, as David Ferry, I mean, just over the top. I mean, somebody who I just love the fact that it is like his whole character is like, if I would have just been a priest, everything would have been okay. If they'd have just allowed me to be a priest, even though the fact that I was a homosexual, you know, everything would have been okay. There's just so many great characters. And really, the one thing that I always go back to on this is that I saw this in 1991 when it first came out. I don't think I didn't see it in the theater. I saw it when it came out on VHS.
Two VHS tapes.
Yeah. Two VHS. If I'm not mistaken, I may still have them. I may still have this, but you know, just showing my age. God, the fact that I was a normie, I didn't even know what the term libertarian was at the time, and I was just fascinated by this movie. And I'm just like, yeah, I really think the government could do this. I really think they could get away with it and everything. So I don't give it 9. I give it 8.5, 6.5 by 52 Carcano rounds.
Very specific. Thank you.
Because they say that's the round that killed them, but
the pristine bullet that was found in the morgue. Right?
Yeah, it's like, come on. Or the first time I heard that, I'm like, are you serious? Have none of you even shot? I remember shooting a round through an engine block, and we went and dug it out, and the thing was just completely shredded and everything. Or anyone who's ever shot a deer, when you dig the round out, I mean, what does the round look like? Come on.
Yeah. And that's the magic one that's supposed to have shattered like 7 different bones, right?
Come on. It's ridiculous.
Yeah. The magic loogie.
So what did I say? 8.5?
You did.
Yeah. 8.5.
8.5. Yep. There you go.
All right. Well, very good. Well, I appreciate both of your opinions, and in the triangulation of fire here, I'm going to be the third, not on the grassy knoll, not in the book depository, but whatever the other position was. But yeah, I haven't seen this in a long, long time, but it really holds up well. It's one of those timeless movies that I think you could watch, you know, a few decades from now, it'd still be good. It is a very nice way of like opening up people's minds to the possibilities, right? And as I mentioned earlier, Stone was not necessarily saying that this is like totally, you know, historically accurate, but he was offering a counterpoint to what he knew was an inaccurate Warren report. So by having the counterbalance, you at least have the idea that maybe there's something else going on here, and it kind of inspires the viewer to look into it deeper. And I think that that's a very beneficial thing. Like if we were to just buy in everything that the government tells us, or what quote unquote science tells us, then we wouldn't have much of a life before too long. So having something like this that is, I mean, I think it's almost a revolutionary movie. It's a movie that I'm surprised even got made. If you really consider the ideas of how much went into the events that it's depicting, and how much has gone into Hollywood and influencing culture and how movies and television and other entertainment gets made, I'm surprised that Stone didn't got to and thwarted or prevented in doing what he wanted. So for that, I think it's an amazing accomplishment. And I was reading a little bit into Stone's positions, political positions, and they say that he comes from a leftist viewpoint. However, he's
a commie.
But he also supported Ron Paul on his anti-interventionist stances back in 2012. But he did, and I think this is a quote, he said, but he's a mess domestically. So, yeah, I think you're right that he's one of those progressive types who's anti-war, but economically illiterate.
Yeah.
Like a Jimmy Dore type.
Yeah.
So they can be good on Glenn a lot, Greenwald. Like the big important stuff. But when it comes to, you know, the day-to-day affecting like our day-to-day lives in a non-war capacity.
I'll take a principled leftist who's anti-war. I mean, he gets so few principled leftists about anything. So,
Did you say principled leftist?
I know, it's a contradiction in terms, right?
Yeah, but they're sticking to something, and that's good. So Stone seems to be good, Dore's good, and Greenwald is good. I think we'd all kind of agree on that. But as far as the film goes, I think it's revolutionary, and it's amazing that it got made at all. Now, as a movie, I think you're right that it's not like a great story or like a, I don't know, there's not like this amazing plot or all of that kind of elements. It's more almost documentary style, but we've already sort of stated that it's not historically accurate. It's like a think piece. And if that's how you approach it, I think it accomplishes that very well. So I'm also going to give it a 9 shots cool. ring out in this November night or November day.
6.5 by 52 Carcano.
That's right. Bolt in action.
5.3, whatever.
I've actually shot one of those. And here's the thing. There's a lot of kick on it. So if you want to really actually believe within like 5.7 seconds, the third shot
being
was the one
kill shot
from the front when he would have behind him.
Go fuck yourself. I mean, it's like, and I know people who've been to Dealey Plaza. I've never been to Dealey Plaza. I know people have been to Dealey Plaza and go, oh, well, you know, if you look at it, you know, it's really only 88 yards. So the shot was less than a football field. Most people don't realize that. Most people think it's like this really long shot, but it's less than a football field. But still, the third shot on a bolt action rifle that kicks like a mule. I'm sorry. No, that would have had to been pure luck. And I'm sorry, I don't believe in pure luck when it comes to ballistics like that. It just doesn't make sense.
Yeah, and assassins wouldn't leave that up to one lone killer.
Yeah. I mean, to believe, I'm just a psychopath who went to Russia and then came back and I ended up hating Kennedy. So I'm going to kill Kennedy. And it's just like, the hell are you talking? It's just the most absurd
story. It's a fantasy story told for children.
It's so ridiculous, man.
Right. And wasn't everyone upset with him for being like, quote unquote, pro-communist, you know?
Yeah. It's so ridiculous. And then you see that. Have you ever seen the picture of him? Allegedly, he went to Mexico City and tried to go to the Russian embassy in Mexico City. And they have a pic. There's a picture
that was in the movie. Yeah, that was in the movie. And the second Oswald or the third Oswald.
Yeah, the third Oswald, who's like 275 pounds.
Yeah.
Okay, sure. Yeah, I believe that.
It's like the fat Bin Laden. You know, you got to have a couple of
versions. Yeah, with all the perfect makeup. Yeah.
Yeah. You know.
But it's like stage makeup. It's not like for a movie, you know.
This is important. You got to have a couple different copies. You know, can't leave it to chance.
Yeah, that's right. Well, hey, get sick. I think this was a good movie and a good discussion. And Pete, I thank you for coming on for this. And also for hooking
it's
us
a
up
Kevin
with
Kevin Costner movie. How am I not going to come on?
That's right. Baby. You know what? We got to have you back. And I think we should do Bull Durham during like spring training if that ever happens.
Oh yeah. Let's see.
And you know, if that's too far in the future, who knows? Maybe the Bodyguard. Perfect Day.
I'm not doing that. Oh, yes, Perfect Day. Fine. I'm not doing the Bodyguard. I'm sorry. It's not gonna happen. I just can't do it, man. I can do a lot of cheese. I can't do that one.
Well, we'll always love you anyway, Pete. But yeah, Perfect Day. I think that would be a great film to do.
Oh, love that movie.
All right. And speaking of great films to do, apparently, Robert, next week we're going to do a good movie that didn't get a whole lot of play, like not a lot of notoriety, but it's a movie called High Rise. And we're going to be doing that with James Gentleman of Urban Agorist, who guests. Yeah, he's a great dude. And we were guests of his recently, a couple of weeks ago. And I think you were too, right, Pete?
Yeah, he released mine. Yeah.
Yeah.
It was nice to listen to it so I could remember what I said.
That's how I feel every episode.
People don't realize that about podcasters. We're like, all right, that was cool. What the hell did I say? Oh, my God.
What was that about? What are we? I
have no idea. Oh, yeah, yeah. Every time I go in after recording, I ask my wife because she's watching and I'm like, was that any good? I don't know what I said.
Yep.
So
beats me. I don't know. I was there. That's all I know.
Right. Well, anyway, this was really good. And people can check you out at libertarianinstitute.org, the Monopoly on Violence.com, and also freemanbeyondthewall.com.
500th episode coming out on Thursday. Please do not think I'm a fascist after it is released and you listen to it.
All right. I'm intrigued. I will definitely listen to that one now.
That's a great achievement. Congratulations.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Thank you.
All right. Well, hey, thank you, our audience, for listening. And if you want to support us in any way, if you like what we do here, go to our Patreon page at lastnighters.com/Patreon, throw a few shekels our way, and we will give you pre-show and post-show bonus content and anything else we can think of. We've got a nice little group going on Facebook that is probably going to get kicked off before too long. So I'm actually over on MeWe now also. So any listener who's interested, connect with me on MeWe. We also have an actual Anarchy page there. And soon to be a Last Nighters page, because this is the Last Nighters portion of the show. I've been having too many Molotov cocktails here. Anyway, this has been our episode on JFK. So thank you, Pete. And we will be on with James Gentleman next week with High Rise. And hopefully you can stick around for a little bit longer for our post-show bonus content. Yeah, check this out at lastnighters.com/151. That's where you can find the show notes and more. And there's going to be a lot of stuff. We mentioned so many things. So look for that. And we'll see you guys all next week for High Rise. Peace out.
Let me take a leak real quick. Be right back.
All right. And we're continuing the Actual Anarchy podcast for just a moment here as Pete takes a leak.
We should always say that every time. That's great.
We should take that. So, Robert, I'll just... Back. Pause. Pause. P for pause. Pause for P.
What do you got, Danny? What's your question?
That's actually a thing that my... Sorry, wife. When we're watching stuff, she has like a bladder of a small child, though she's a fully grown adult person. But she'll say, you know, P for pause, pause for P, and we'll pause the iPad and she'll come back. Now, when we watched JFK the other night, and we had a very short turnaround from doing They Live to doing this one.
Yes, we did.
So watching a 3+ hour movie, she made it about 45 minutes in, and then she had to call it in.
Nice work.
I ended up staying up till almost midnight watching this on Monday night.
Oh, you see, you finished it on Monday night. I finished it 10 minutes before showtime.
Oh, nice. Yeah, yeah. I was like beast moding, and I'm like, I got to do this.
Hilarious. That's hilarious. I literally watched it at work this morning. I couldn't get any work done on my job because today was one of the windiest days I can remember in Atlanta history. So basically, I had nothing to do all day. I'm just sitting there going, oh, shit, I got JFK tonight. So I watched JFK at 1.5 speed.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, yeah. And you could totally watch this at speed because, like, you're not going to get all the facts and the information.
No
info.
Way.
Yeah.
No way. I mean, it's who said, I think it was Robert who said, it's just like an info dump. And it really is. I mean, but I love it. You know, like I said, you know, I'm old enough to remember when this came out and I didn't see it in the theater. Saw it when it hit VHS, double tape. And I don't know how many times I watched it back then because I watched it. I haven't watched it in forever. And I watched it this morning and it was like, I had watched it yesterday. It was just, yeah. I mean, it's just so memorable. So many great scenes. I honestly believe the whole scene with Donald Sutherland as X, that's like one of my favorite scenes ever in like movie history. I just love when he's just dumping all that information on him and they're switching over to, you know, showing helicopters land in Vietnam and all this stuff. And yeah, I love that scene so much.
Yeah. And Costner's like, and Donald Sutherland's like, yeah, you've been doing this to us the whole movie. How do you like it, bitch?
and oh man, Joe Pesci as David Ferry. How awesome.
Oh, fantastic.
Oh yeah, my God. Yeah. Oh my God. Because David Ferry, have you ever like looked up the pictures of the real David Ferry?
No.
He doesn't look any different. It's literally like that's what the guy looks like. What
a crazy character to have a bunch of rats in your house developing your own cancer cure.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah, that I think at least 10 books have been written just about him.
Hmm.
That's pretty wild. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, well, hey, I had saved one question for this portion of the show, sure. And it was, with all of the things that Kennedy was trying to accomplish and apparently pissing off the deep state and the MIC, was he actually a good guy? Because he was, you know, he had a big D next to his name there, right? Democrat. But I think Democrats today would consider him a Nazi.
Oh, 100. I mean, he's a war hero. PT-109. I mean, the guy's a war hero. I mean, they don't really idolize war heroes. I mean, even through the whole John McCain and everything, even when John McCain was like calling, what's his name? Rand Paul. Remember a couple of years ago when he said Rand Paul was like a Putin agent and this was on the floor and everything. No leftists were backing up John McCain said and everything. So,
but when he died, they seemed to revere him. I think his funeral's still going on, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, I think that there are a lot of people on the left and a lot of people on the right who are in the center, you know, who are really no different. Center right, center left is exactly the same thing. It's just a neoliberal bullshit and everything. They still love John McCain, but the far right, all they know is that Trump made fun of John McCain, and the far left, you know, the progressive left, who are still anti-war, not a lot of them, they know John McCain was a piece of shit. So,
yeah. Robert, what's your position? Was Kennedy a good dude? I mean, it seemed like he was trying to do some things, de-escalate in Vietnam, get rid of the Federal Reserve, smash the CIA to pieces. Those are all laudable things, I think.
Yeah, it's hard to say. I mean, generally speaking, the ones they kill are probably trying to upset the system, which is, of course, horrifically evil. I wish he had lived to be able to do some of that, and then I could definitively say, hey, yeah, he was a good dude. It's kind of like, you know, Trump, he promised to do all this stuff. He promised to drain the swamp. He promised to do, all, you know, and did he? No, he did some of the things, but most of it's not. He continued most of the policies of Obama. And it's like, is he just unable to do these things? Or is he really just another president in a long line of presidents that are all the things that we hate about him? So
right. What's the joke? The president wins and they pull you into a room and they show you the Zapruder film from a different angle.
Well, was it Bill Hicks?
Saying, that sounds right.
Well, I mean, Jesse Ventura, have you ever heard the story when Jesse Ventura won the Minnesota governorship? He said he was pulled into a room and it was a circle and there was 12 people. And they're like, what are your intentions? Basically telling him, like, if you go off the path that we've already set, you're gone. I mean, Ventura has told that story many times. And
I think he was surprised by how everyday normal everybody looked in that room. Like there were like middle-aged soccer moms and young adults and just like, okay.
Like, well, you give them any power, man, and people are going to flex that power. It's kind of the unfortunate situation.
It's crazy, man. I mean, anyone who can look at the Zapruder film and watch it frame by frame and think that the official story is what happened. I mean, I just, you really have to question where that person went to school, what their IQ is. I mean, it's just back into the left. I mean, that was
undeniable.
And what's funny is whenever I hear back into the left now, all I think is that Seinfeld episode. Because it really was the funniest, friggin' one of the funniest things I've ever seen on TV and everything. But I mean, you watch his head. I mean, and I don't know if anyone's ever noticed this before. And it horrified me for so long. And it still bothers me when I think about it. Jack is there, like, he's struggling because he's been shot through the neck. He can't breathe. And he's like, and Jackie leans over and... if you look at the shot, Jackie is actually like, okay, pull the microphone up. She's like this far away from his face when his head explodes. It's always bothered me that, I mean, what would your life be like after that? You're like this in the face of someone that you love. And their head explodes in front of you. What's your headspace after that?
Yeah, definitely not the same.
It's just fucking crazy, you know? I mean, I've seen somebody shot in front of me. I've seen somebody get hit by a bus in front of me. And I'll never forget that. I mean, it's like, that can't be undone. Everything. She watched her husband's head explode in front of her face. And then she like, and you can tell how she reacts to it by she immediately starts climbing over the back of the limo. Why does she do that? I mean, she's in panic at that point. Oh, yeah. I mean, wouldn't the most logical people to ask for help would be the ones in the front seat and, you know, or the driver or something like that. And she starts climbing out the back. I mean,
yeah. Or to duck and hide, you know, try to get
her.
Yeah.
The Zapruder. It's fight or flight has taken over and she is.
I'll tell you, the Zapruder film is probably the craziest thing I've ever seen in my life, man. I mean, I just can't. I mean, I've never seen a UFO. It's the craziest thing I've ever seen in my life because it's like, it's so obvious what happened. Jesus. They just fucking killed the president of the United States because they didn't like him. I mean, nowadays, you know, it's like, it's like CIA used to kill people. The CIA used to dose people with high levels of LSD, make them go crazy, put them in a thing. Now they just fucking put child porn on your computer or something like that. Everything. And it's the same thing that they did to Trump is they just, he's a Russian agent. I mean, and look at that chestnut. It's like, isn't that from like 1980, the 80s or something like that? It's like, oh, you have a president that's, you worry about having a president that is sympathetic to Russia. And what did Obama say in 2012 to Mitt Romney? The 80s called and they want their foreign policy back. And they pulled that shit for 2 years. I mean, I forget who said it was, like somebody counted the amount of times that MSNBC said Russia, and it was like closing in on 100,000.
You'd have to use AI. There's no way
could do it. It's insanity. You know, but it's like, oh, but you know, they couldn't kill the president of the United States. Okay, sure.
It's happened a few times before, if I recall my history.
Well, that one in the Ford Theater was definitely a looker.
Sure as shit he was.
And then, you know, well, and I did find a mistake in. Didn't they say in the movie at one point that a chief executive hadn't been assassinated in the 200-year history of the United States?
That sounds familiar.
He makes some kind of claim like that, but I forget what he said exactly.
Yeah, he says something really weird. I'm thinking, okay. And the first thing, what's funny is, I didn't even go to Lincoln. I went to McKinley.
Yeah.
And I'm like, McKinley got killed by an anarchist because Emma Goldman got blamed for the whole thing. So it's like, that was a weird little thing that the Stone put in there.
Yeah, and wasn't didn't Taylor die of mysterious circumstances like food poisoning?
Yeah,
and he was the only one to contract the food poisoning out of the entire event.
Yeah,
gotta have a taster, man.
That's right. Yeah. Well,
I'm a monarch. I'm essentially a monarchist, so I definitely believe in the taster.
All right, so Pete's taking applicants to be his taster going forward. Go to freemanbeyondthewall.com. And you can find the show notes and more for this episode of the Actual Anarchy Podcast at actualanarchy.com/208. We're going to wind it down now and go into our Patreon bonus content available for Patreon supporters. So go to actualanarchy.com/Patreon to send some money our way, and we will give you exclusive access to that. And we'll be on next week with James Timmon, the urban agorist for High Rise. And again, check out Free Man Beyond the Wall and the Libertarian Institute and the Monopoly on Violence. Pete is one of the hardest working men out there, and lots of things worth checking out. So thank you again for being our guest and for hooking us up with Bob Murphy last week. And we'll get into the bonus content right after these messages. Peace out, everyone. Maximum freedom.
Chipmunks. CHIPMUNK. We're the chipmunks. Guaranteed to brighten your day. Do, 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 do.